You are listening to Believe, Strive, Achieve, Endurance Podcast with Diogo Custodio. If this is your first time listening, then thanks so much for coming. Get ready and enjoy the show.
So, guess we just want to say thanks for joining us, Millie, and we're having a chance here to have a little bit of a chat about women in sport as part of the International Women's Day kind of celebration, recognition. Amrita and I spoke about doing something like this, and we spoke for hours about lots of different aspects of women in sport. So we thought we'd extend the conversation a little bit and record it so people can watch it later. So I'll give a little bit of background. I'll do a little bit of background about me, and then Rita and Millie, if you want to do the same. Just give you a little bit of background. I live in Scotland, near Edinburgh. I am 59 years old, and I have been doing triathlon for about 15 years. And I have been coaching for five years, so since 2019. And I've been with Tri Training Harder now for 3 years. And I've done all sorts of different levels of triathlon, starting at sprint, swore I'd never do an Ironman. About 6 years later, I did an Ironman, did it again the following year because I loved it, and then decided that actually the training is a little too much and too intense for a full to do too often. So I've stuck to kind of middle distance and standard now, but more middle distance. And yeah, really loved it so much. I left my previous company and started coaching full time, which, well, not full time, but it's what I do with my time now, is I coach either virtually or face to face in sessions. So that's me.
Yeah, so I can go next. So my name is Rita. I live in Peniche in Portugal, in the western coast. And I'm 44 years old. I've been swimming for my whole life since I was three. I've been coaching swimming for like 25 years and triathlon for the last 10. And that's basically what I do with my life now. I was a veterinary doctor and I'm now retired. And I really enjoyed triathlon. I enjoyed all the atmosphere, all the athletes and the people and the camaraderie. And yeah, it's something that I really enjoy doing. And as a woman, I think there should be more of us doing it. I think, especially here in Portugal, we are very few, but good. And yeah, that's me.
Yeah, I'm Millie. You might hear my dog whining in the background. I've been doing triathlon about 4 years now. I kind of came to it in COVID. I was a runner and everything was cancelled and there was a triathlon that wasn't. So I did that and sort of that the rest is history. I loved it. And here I am still 3-4 years later, being coached with Tri Training Harder. I'm 30. I recently quit my job in the city, kind of working in sports charities, to focus on kind of triathlon, both myself, also coaching it. So I recently qualified as a British Triathlon Foundation coach and I've started coaching a couple of junior teams in Oxfordshire. She's now destroying the sofa behind me. I teach wellbeing, so PSHE. So Rita, I don't know if you have anything similar in Portugal, but it's sort of kids in England have to have a certain amount of education on things like, it covers everything. So puberty, female health, teenage health, male health, sex education, all sorts of things. And particularly because of my interest in sport and triathlon, I like kind of bringing that all together. So I had a big life change a year ago and so far, absolutely, absolutely love it. And yeah, doing more and more of it. So that's me. And I mainly do middle distance, trying to get as fast as I can at middle distance. That's sort of what I do as an athlete.
That's good. That's really interesting, actually. I didn't realize you did all of that. So that's great. So when Rita and I were discussing, we went around lots and lots of things. And one of the areas we are happy to discuss but don't really want to focus on is really around things like menstrual health and menopause. We feel like sometimes that's all people talk about with female athletes. And as I put it the other day, we're more than a bag of hormones. That's not what we are. You know, there's a lot of other things. And one of the things we talked a lot about was the work-life balance. And I think that's true for any athlete. You know, you've always got to get that work-life balance. But I still think that for any kind of household, women are still expected to manage the household, whether that's with children or without, but even being the ones to recognize there's no bread in the cupboard, or, you know, the sinks look like they needed cleaning and nobody's done them. You know, it's that sort of thing. So I think there's a whole area there that I think is interesting to talk about. How does that impact on our ability to train, focus on our training, and get good at what we want to do, when we also have this whole like stuff that maybe a lot of male athletes just kind of go, oh, somebody else will do that. That's fine.
Rita, you look like you're poised to say something.
I think definitely it's something that I end up feeling women in general, not just me, end up doing a lot of housework, even if you have someone who comes to clean, someone has to organize, do the shopping, prepare meals, or think about what, even if you're not making it, you have to think what has to be bought and what are you having for dinner, for example. And that's something that sometimes is not recognized, that mental load, even if you're not doing it, that you have to plan on it. And that's something that takes a lot of mental energy. And yeah, in the end, sometimes women, instead of going for a run, maybe they will fix something that needs to be done in the house. And I think that's something you actually also learn. It's that sometimes you have to come first, and all the things that will never end, because cleaning or getting a house organized, never, it's a never ending job. So I love the image. I don't know if you know this, is this image, it's like in an airplane when there's the cabin is depressurized, you have those oxygen masks, and you should always put your mask before everyone else and around you. And that's something that I think about lots of times. It's like, yeah, maybe the other people in the house need help and need me to do something for them, but if I'm not okay, if I haven't taken care of myself, I won't be able to help anyone else. So sometimes going for a 20-minute run, or going to swim, or whatever it is that I need to train, actually makes me happier and more willing to then help everyone and around me. So I think that's and it's also a way to decompress, so you can think about all the things you have to do while you're running. So yeah, I think the mental load is definitely something that I didn't even recognize until I was a mom, and it's overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah, kind of trying to think about, I know a few couples who train, and yes, definitely, if it was suggested that that more of the responsibility went on to the man for childcare or getting the kids ready for school or something, you'd just be like, why am I doing that? You know, so these children didn't come just from one person, you know?
And when you start to take on things, it just kind of piles up because you're already doing this. So if you're cooking, then you go shopping. And if you go shopping and you're already going into town, then you'll do something else. And then it's like, in the end, it's easier to do it yourself than to ask someone else to do it. And yeah, that's a trap.
Yeah, that's you're right though. It's just, you just take it on. Instead of just saying, this needs done, you do it. Did you want to add something, Millie?
Yeah, I wonder if some of that.
It's fine.
Orla clearly wants to add something as well. I wonder if some of it is, I don't know, I want to be careful what I say, because my husband would probably be upset if I, you know, said he doesn't do any of that stuff. But I wonder if some of it is just how we are, like, predisposed as well. So we don't have kids. We have a dog who's quite hard work, being a 10-month-old puppy. But it's just the two of us. But it's definitely more strain probably on me just because of who I am. And I'll notice when the fridge is empty and when stuff needs cleaning. Just notice I just have a lower tolerance, I suppose, than Chris, who's brilliant, but just notices it after I need to do it for my own, like, sanity. I don't have the childcare or anything like that to kind of say it's not equal division of labour in that sense. So I wonder if that's just, I don't know, women in general, we just have a slightly lower tolerance to it because we're just, I think Rita, you said overwhelmed, just so aware of all the stuff that's got to happen to keep your life running, whether that's on your own, with partner, with kids.
It's interesting as to why women do feel that they're the ones responsible for this sort of stuff. You know, is that because we are like that and we multitask, or is it because we're told we need to be like that from quite a young age and we watch our mothers do that, and so you feel that you need to do that?
I must say I have been in both sides of the equation, because I used to live with a roommate, and she would have to tell me the bathroom needs cleaning, the kitchen needs cleaning. Her tolerance level was a lot lower than mine. So for me, it was still okay. And for her, it was not. So I've been the one, I genuinely didn't notice. It wasn't something that would bother or I wouldn't even care. And of course, when she told me, I would make my best to do my part. But I can imagine now, being on the other side, that she would probably take days or weeks until she told me, you need to clean, it's your turn. And for me, everything was fine. And now I'm on the other side of the equation, and I usually say, I wouldn't be married anymore if I didn't have someone to come and clean, because it's such a big discussion, and it's such a heavy burden. And definitely, I think that's a very important thing in our household, that someone takes on that job that I really dislike. And it's and honestly, my husband doesn't have time for it. So I don't get resentful. We kind of outsource that. But there's all the rest. So I'm not sure. Yeah. I think it's a little bit individual, but yes, women are more predisposed to have like a nice house, clean house. Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
And I don't know what it's like in Portugal, but in the UK, I mean, I always had a cleaner when I worked, because I was away a lot, and I'd come back and I feel like I come home, I clean the house, and then I leave again. And then I come home and I clean the house, and then I leave again. And it's like,
and you never
I don't
use
even
it.
Live here this much. I'm only here for two nights. Why am I cleaning it? And it was definitely the biggest cause of our arguments. And that would be like, okay, look, if it's going to stop us arguing, we'll get a cleaner. But I did feel the need to justify it to a lot of people. And I don't know why that it was. You know, you're like, we're both out at work all day. We both have good jobs. We can afford it. We're putting money back into the economy. It's paying That's somebody funny. To do something I don't want to do. But I did feel what I needed to kind of justify why I wasn't coming home and doing the cleaning.
Yeah, because it should be your responsibility as a woman to have a nice home. Yeah,
exactly.
I think in the end, it's a little bit like that. It's pressure from other women usually, or from ourselves, that you have to have a spotless, beautiful home, or you're not a good homemaker or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And it's probably worse with children. You know, you get all that kind of, whatever you do, some woman is judging you that you are raising your children right or wrong. You know, if you breastfeed or you don't breastfeed, or you stay at home, or you work, or you take your kids to kindergarten, or you don't. You know, it's like whatever you do is wrong.
That's also something I, since I had kids, I stopped judging people so much because it's so hard to, it's impossible to get everything right. So whatever someone's doing, it's like, I'm pretty sure it's their best. And yeah, if we all support each other instead of judging, it's a lot better for everyone. So yeah. I hope in the end, that's, I think what this chat is about is if we all support each other and we understand how it is in each other's lives, then it's easier to bring more women to triathlon and to support them and to tell them it's okay if your house is not spotless, it's fine because yeah, you run really fast or you are fit and you are healthy, and maybe that's more important than a shining floor.
There was one other thing I wanted to talk about, and then I think that takes us onto role models, which is quite nice. But I did have somebody I worked with in America, and she had a fantastic way of handling this stuff, and I really liked it, and I used to try and do it. So her approach, she sat down with her husband, she was like, look, all this stuff needs doing. You know, like somebody has to do shopping, somebody has to do the cooking, somebody has to do the cleaning, somebody has to get the kids to school, somebody has to get the kids lunches. You know, they kind of got the big blocks of stuff. And then she said, okay, we agreed who was going to do what. And that was fine. But she said the biggest thing that she found most difficult, but she made herself do it, was if his job was to do the shopping, that was his job. And the only level of proviso was there must always be food in the house that night for dinner because they've got kids. And she said, yeah, we can't just eat takeout when you've got kids. There's got to be food there. But he would go shopping 4 or 5 times a week. And she would be like, I don't know why he does that, because I would just go once. But then she said, I have to just let him do that because he's taken that job and he's now doing it the way he's doing it. So what she learned to do was to step back and not criticize that he was
micromanaging.
Exactly. It's like, that's his job. And she would only step in if there was an empty fridge and the kids come home from school and there's nothing to eat. But she said that never actually happened. She said she found it quite stressful at first, because she would be like, there's only 2 days worth of food in the fridge. What are we going to do? Whereas his approach was, I only buy for 2 days. And she was like, well, he's spending 4 times as much time in the shop as I would, but that's his choice.
In the end, if he gets the job done. I remember my dad used to put the dishes in the dishwasher, and my mom would come and would just take everything out and put it back in the way she liked it, until my dad finally said, I'm not doing this anymore if you're going to go and do it all over again. And so I think that was the last time he did anything around the house. So that's also my upbringing, is my mom doing everything and my dad doing nothing. So that's what I grew up seeing. So even if I try to be someone else and to do differently, and that's how my husband grew up. Also, his mom did everything and his dad did nothing. So changing that is really hard, and it has to be, it has to be very conscious. It's hard.
My parents were very traditional as well. So my mother stayed home. Once she was pregnant, she gave up work, you know, with the first baby, and she had 5 in total. So she was fairly busy. You know, it was her primary role was to be home, to look after the house. And I remember when my brother was at school and she wanted to start working, my dad was really not happy. His attitude was quite traditional. His attitude was, people will think I can't afford to feed the family. If you go out to work, they'll think that I'm not earning enough money. Whereas for my mom, it was that little bit of financial independence. And what am I doing all the day? You know, but she was still... If she was working, she worked around school hours, she was still expected to be the one that did the shopping, the cooking, the cleaning, you know, the washing, the ironing. Everything was down to her. My dad would occasionally cook a meal, but that was it. And he had a very traditional upbringing too. So, you know, it kind of comes through. But the world's different now. You know, women aren't just staying at home, only doing the looking after the household thing. So it is interesting. My role model was very much, you know, a woman who'd stayed home and looked after us. So it is, you've got to change that. And I think maybe it's easier for women to change it because we got the benefit of changing it? Well, you know, if what yeah. we're looking for is to try and get a man to do more, they're like, oh, suddenly I've got to start doing stuff in the house that I wasn't expecting to do.
I love the idea that you educate your children, your boys especially, to do it. So if they grow up not only watching but learning that mm-hmm. they also have a role, that will be probably the best way to change things. And I hope that will come in the next generation easier, at least for my daughters, that they will get a partner who already feels like equal, he has to do equal work in the house. But yeah, I don't think we're there yet.
There's also a whole group of women who might be wanting to do triathlon and don't have a partner for support at all. So on the other hand, like, you know, we talk about unequal, or not unequal, I don't want to use that word, but like taking more upon ourselves to do stuff and fill the fridge and pick up the dog or the kids or whatever. But also there's a load of people out there without that support to rely on or get annoyed at all, because now we're that we can work and we can do all of these things on our own. Mm-hmm. So actually don't have doing it alone, don't have that support. So kind of trying to, you know, train for an Ironman whilst also being a doctor full time and do all of these things without somebody else to help support. So yeah, totally, like another bunch of superheroes doing that.
Oh, absolutely. And I know a couple of single mums that managed to train for triathlon, and how they get the time to do that. I mean, it is a phenomenal amount of organisation.
And determination.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's tough to do. I thought I had to be organised when I was doing full-time office work. But yeah, that's another layer, definitely.
Yeah.
I think one of the things I have said a lot of times is we should have childcare during events like competitions, because sometimes you want to go to a race, but you have to bring the kids with you. And yes. and if a couple both practice triathlon and are racing, sometimes you don't have grandparents or someone mm-hmm. to care about them. And if they were somewhere to drop them for a little bit during the race and they could still be around the race and be there when you finish, that would be a great idea. I think it's something that should be implemented, and that would help massively with being able to go to races.
I think that's a really good idea.
To be Ironman. It could be just like a sprint.
No, I think that is a really good idea.
Yeah, I think that would help with getting more women to race and to be in the sport. Yeah.
I do remember finishing a sprint race, and as I came over the line, there's this little kid, I was maybe about 4 or 5, stood at the end saying, "Oh, come on, mummy." And I said, "I think she's running as fast as she can." And then when she did come in 5 minutes later, I turned around, she came running over and she was like, "Yeah." And then she went, "Oh, no." And this 4-year-old boy was having a wee against the tree. And it's like, yeah, that was supposed to be keeping an eye on him, I think.
I'm just looking at Instagram, because there's, I don't know if you two have heard of it, there's an organization called She Races. So it's set up by Sophie, I think her name is Power, GB Ultra Runner. So she made the news a couple of years ago because she was breastfeeding during, it was the spine race or something, I can't remember which race.
Oh, Jasmine.
So this was Sophie, but Jasmine.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Jasmine as well.
Oh, it was Jasmine that won it, yeah.
But she's set up a small organisation called She Races, which is basically trying to get event organisers to be a bit more inclusive for women. It includes things from making sure all of their imagery and all of their like comms includes women, right towards making sure that there are like period products in Portaloos, and or there are at least Portaloos there, because not even all races have that. Yeah. And I just wondered if they'd looked at kind of the childcare, because I'd never thought of that side. Because I think, like you both said at the beginning, it's quite focused on the like menstrual health side of things, which is great, because there's such a big drive towards that. But there's so much more to it. So yeah, just I'm gonna have a look. I'll report back. I'll see if you mentioned that anywhere about push for that, because I love that idea.
I mean, I think that's really important. There are a lot of things. I don't know if you've ever done any of the Castle series, Millie. Yeah, they are massively family inclusive.
Yeah.
Which is a really nice thing. So if you, even if you've got a couple who both want to race, there's stuff on over the weekend, and there's so many levels of events that you would probably be able to both race. There's stuff to keep the kids entertained. There's like climbing walls and archery and bands and, you know, all this sort of stuff on. And there's events for kids as well. So, I mean, I think it's astonishing. It's 10-year-old kids going out swimming in the lake. You know, it's like, it's freezing in there. What are you doing? But that, yeah, I mean, they're all doing it. And I think it's fantastic that they've really opened it up to the family level. And yeah, that does make it a lot easier, I think, for women to think this is something I can do and be that role model. Because I think it's really important that, you know, people do see, you know, boys and girls see women doing these things.
Yeah, that was something we also talked about is, for example, now watching cycling, women cycling on TV, which is something we never had before. And for my kids, it's completely normal to watch women cyclists or women triathletes, or, and I wouldn't have never thought about that. Like in my wildest dream, would I imagine a woman racing Tour de France? It was, I never imagined that. And I think for my kids, like, yeah, why not? It's, of course. And that's a big change. And like seeing me race, seeing my stepmom race and all the women. So for them, I don't think it even crosses their mind that there was a time where the women did not do whatever they please or didn't race. Or so as a role model, I think that's how we teach kids and that how we bring more girls and women to sports, even if it's not triathlon. If they learn from a young age that sports is for everyone and that you can do anything you want, it's very powerful, I think.
I think there's such a there needs to also be like an education piece for like adults who maybe didn't have that as kids. So like in the school environment, bearing in mind I've only been there for 6 months, but it's really telling that mainly girls, if they don't want to do a sport because they're not feeling well, or usually they're on their period every single time they are meant to swim, the teachers just go, okay, fine, they can't swim. And there's a big attitude that if they have PE in the morning and they have a wet swimming costume, they can't possibly swim in the afternoon. And that's just one example, but it's a bugbear of mine that kind of actually they're, the people around them are saying, oh yeah, you don't need to do that because you can't, you obviously can't cope with that.
Not working.
You can't cope with it. And it's just, yeah, there's kind of such a big shift needed to kind of help the girls see that, okay, well, if they don't want to swim, what can we get them to do instead? Or actually, you might be in agony this week and you can't do anything, and that's fine, but how about next week we try something else? So there's you know, it's only going so far with all of this, being able to see these role models out there, but what are we doing in the school environment to like help teachers and the role models they see at school encourage them into sport? Is something I'm noticing quite a lot. I'd like to see a big shift.
That's interesting, because that's effectively enabling the girls to say, I'm on my period, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And we know that there's an enormous drop off for girls, you know, in kind of like early teenage years in taking part in sport. And I'm sure a lot of it's down to body image. And they don't want the boys to see them in whatever, you know, they don't want the boys to see them in a swimming costume. They don't want the boys to see them in leggings or whatever. Or, you know, they don't want to turn up in a t-shirt and baggy leggings when, you know, the girl next to them is looking gorgeous, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so it's twofold. It's like, how can we create the environment so that they can swim without the boys seeing them, but also how do we also help them kind of embrace whatever they look like as a teenager and swim with the boys? So it's kind of doing both at the same mm-hmm. time, creating those environments mm-hmm. where they can do it safely and they feel like they can do it because no one's watching, but at the same yeah. time not making that like, oh, you have to go and exercise over here because it's okay if you feel this way. It's like, how do we also encourage them to just embrace it? So I don't have the solution yet, but watch this space.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really interesting area. I mean, what are your girls like, Rita? Are they good at just getting on with sport? Or?
Yeah, well, it would be hard not to. So,
well, yeah, you and Sergio, yeah.
Yeah, they are also young. So I think, and I see from all the, so from the 25 years of teaching, the problem, especially with girls, is 13, 14 years old, I would say 80% drops off swimming. And I think in general, they stop playing sports. And there isn't much, we don't have much to offer them because we don't have many team sports after 14. They don't want to go swimming. They don't want to go to the gym. So there's kind of a, what do they do after 13 when they stop being kids and they start being young adults or teens? There's nothing, even in school, like Millie said, sometimes they don't want to do anything and they do the least amount possible of sports. And I think another thing is I see a huge divide. Kids who have parents who practice sports and who are sporty and all the rest. And it's massive. It's like you have 20% of kids who are very sporty and 80% who do nothing. And it's, there's no in between. So I think one of the biggest problems is how do you get those 80 at least to do something? How can you get them to do something? And in girls, I think it's even harder because boys, if you throw a ball, they will always, most of them will like to run after the ball or run after themselves or just skate, or there's so many other options. And yeah, I don't know, maybe cycling, girls gyms, girls teams, maybe that's something that will be a good option for kids. And I think starting early is definitely a good way. But as Millie said, I also don't have the answer. I think it's really hard to solve this.
Yeah, and as you're talking, both of you talking there, I realized that I walk past the school quite a lot. And apart from seeing the organized like classes, you often see kids out there, they'll just be playing football or, you know, they'll get into the football area outside of school times. It's always boys. You know, you never see any girls. And up by the skate park as well, it's probably 90% boys. You know, even doing stuff like that, I think is just seen as not cool. You're going to look red and sweaty. You know, you're not going to look good. I don't know. Or it's just not what my friends do, so it's not what I do. It is difficult to know what the answer is. Because the Scottish government does have an incentive whereby every school child has access to a bicycle. Now, that may not be an option for them to cycle to school. Our local school, it's not a good option for most kids. They'd probably, take their life in their hands going on the roads in some places. But at least they're all being taught bike skills and they have classes and they take them out on the bikes, and that's boys and girls. So at least you have that option. So, yeah, but I don't know how you get past that. It doesn't matter what you look like. It's what you do and what you enjoy.
Yeah. It's a difficult age, I think. But even if they don't do much from 14 to 17 or whatever, how do you get them back? And triathlon is a good sport for that because I think it's so friendly and And if you're not good at running, maybe you're good at cycling, maybe you can be good at swimming. And it's okay if you're not the greatest at everything, you can just improve. There's always so much room for improvement. So yeah, I think triathlon is a good sport to start when you're older. And we are all an example of that. You come, and it's okay if you start when you're 50 or 40 or whatever, and you'll still be well received and supported. So I think it's a very good way to get back on sports or even start. So I think that's a powerful thing triathlon has.
Yeah, I think the thing that we have with triathlon is it doesn't matter what your gender is or what age you are. If you enter a race, everyone does the same course. And I really like that. So, you know, if you enter a sprint, everyone's doing the same route. And you might start together. I mean, that's quite common in sprints. You just go on your swim time, especially if it's a pool-based swim. So I really encourage anyone who's really thinking about triathlon to just go and watch a local sprint race. Because if you watch the Olympics or you watch the Ironman events on TV, you are going to decide that you cannot possibly ever do this. But if you go and watch a local triathlon, you will discover people of all ages and sizes and fitness levels at those local sprint events. There'll be at least one person in the pool who's stopping every two lengths to take a breath. But they will still finish it and they will get cheered over the finish line. And they might be a fantastic cyclist. You know, they might get out of the water and just bomb past everybody else.
Yeah. I love the idea of going to watch one. I think that's such a nice idea, because actually I think it's a really friendly sport, and it's maybe accessible isn't quite the right word, but you don't if you can borrow a bike, find a swimming costume, you know, you can do a triathlon. But there's definitely a perception that you need a lot of stuff. You need to know what you're doing. Like, we can't get away from the fact that is kind of definitely a perception. But actually going to watch one and realizing that, you know, everybody does it. I was at Dorney Lake this weekend. Denise, I don't know if you've ever been down to Dorney Lake and done any of them kind of down here, but they it's a great venue because they set off the super sprint and the sprint and the standard and the half marathon and the 5K and everyone all at the same time. So everyone goes at the same time, and it's kind of, you know, you've got the, I mean, they had ex-Olympians there on Sunday and they were gunning for their PBs because it's a really flat course. But then you've also got people who have never run more than, you know, 2K, and that's duathlon at the moment because it's too cold to swim. But everybody just goes off at once, and it could be quite intimidating if you rock up and you see these big, tall, elite men with their helmets and their disc wheels and everything. But actually, if you just stand and watch, you realise there are people walking the sprint, super sprint run, and then they're going to get on their borrowed mountain bike and get round it. And I just think they're brilliant. But yeah, I love the idea of going to watch one or something, because actually, until you've really experienced that, it's quite hard to like tell someone that it, like, everybody does do it until you've actually seen it. So yeah, I like that.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely changes people's perceptions when you watch one. I mean, I hadn't watched one when I did my first, and it was a pool-based sprint, and I was super, super nervous. But when I turned up, I realized that actually I'm not the least fit looking person here. I mean, I may have been the least fit person in the room, but, you know, you kind of realize, yes, there are people at the sharp end, and there are people with lots of gear, and they may or may not have an idea. But I also think if you're going to turn up with that super bike with the disc wheels and the sweatback helmet, you better be good on the bike.
You just have to look good.
There are a few people that have done that, and then you get somebody on their granny's bike goes past them. You know, it's like, having all the gear doesn't necessarily make you faster. But yeah, you definitely see all sorts these races. Plus, I love the local races. They're not 400 quid to enter. You know, it's much, and you talk about accessibility. Our local ones are like £35-£40 to do a sprint. And you can do it on whatever bike you happen to have. And you don't need a tri-suit when you're doing a sprint.
Yeah. No. And then it's the confidence you get. And that's something we also talked about, is like the confidence you get when you can call yourself a triathlete is like, I can do anything. I'm a triathlete. I can swim in the ocean or in the lake. I can bike and I still run in the at the end. And that kind of trickles down everything in you to everything in your life, because you're not worried about other little things. It's like, yeah, I'm a triathlete. It's I'm an able person. Yeah. And that's something definitely, I think, sports in general, triathlon in particular, because it's so complex. And it has so many things that if you're able to do, even other people look at you like, you do triathlons? That's amazing. And sometimes you don't even realize it yourself. Yeah, it's not that hard, but it is. For most people, it is.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, it is. I worked in an office with loads of people who, I work with Gore, and it's a very sporty environment. And there were ultra runners in my office. There were, you know, people that did all sorts of different levels of running, cycling, triathlon. And as somebody said to me once, it's like, you've got to remember that we're not in the normal world. You know, I talked about doing Ironman. They were like, yeah, we're having that conversation like it's not something weird. But if you went, and I did, I went and spoke to some of my mother's friends when I was looking for sponsorship. And I, okay, so you swim 2.4 miles, you cycle 112 miles, and you run a marathon. How many days does that take? They could not believe that I was going to do it in a day. And it's like, yeah, you forget your sort of normal changes when you start doing these things. And I think that is great. You become part of a community, but then you can also be part of the wider world, but seen as part of that community.
And I think we kind of have a, maybe duty is a bit strong, but, you know, those of us that do, whether it's triathlon or whatever sport, just to like encourage other people to try it. So Rita will remember one of my favorite people in the world now, who came on one of the camps, the TTH camps last year. And she signed up having won a super sprint triathlon and got a discount and just signed up for this camp and got there. And I'm sort of sure if she ever watches this, she won't mind me saying, but had a bit of a freak out because she went, what am I doing? I don't know what I'm doing. All of these people look so pro and I don't even have padded cycling shorts. And by the end of the week, she was just like loving it. She called herself a triathlete. She had the best time ever. I think Rita, you said earlier, like it helps give people confidence in life. Like she's now literally traveling the world with her teaching because she's just kind of discovered herself. And I think a lot of that is down to the people on the camp who just kind of helped her realize that she was just as much part of it as the rest of us there, and that we all had strengths and things we weren't so good at and things we were scared of. And she just, I think she's such a good example of, I mean, it took her confidence to throw herself into it. Obviously not everyone's going to do that as your first dive into it, but yeah, then like just supported by the coaches and everybody else around her, men and women, to just kind of encourage her. And she was brilliant. Like, I will never forget her as such a good example of someone who's just found it and was supported by people, and now will spread the love of it to everyone she meets as well. So
I must say that all the three of us had different careers before we swapped everything for triathlon and sports too, so it's not that different. So there is definitely something here that made us find a purpose on it. It's something that really says something about the sports in general, triathlon specifically, that it kind of changed our lives. So
yeah,
I think that's very telling of how strong it can be, the influence of this.
Yeah, I really like that. I think that's really, really nice way of looking at it. It's one of the things I'm really passionate about, is helping people to do things that they didn't think they could. You know, I run a Jog Scotland group up here, and that's just a semi-informal group of people that get together and run once a week. It's government supported with the training. And I just love the idea that the idea exists to get people out. And I've had people say, oh, I'll come and run with you when I'm good enough. And I'm like, no, we're the group you come to when you want to get good enough to go running with anyone else. You know, if you're going to walk, run at the back, I will do that alongside you. That is not a problem. You know, and it's great. I've seen people come from having no confidence, absolutely couch potatoes, thinking they can't do this, to then running 10Ks in decent times and really, really getting hooked and being great role models for their kids as well. You know, that's the other thing they say. So I've heard people say to me, it's like, my kids realize I can do this, they can do this. And I just love
that. Do you find more women come to those? Because something I've realized in teaching swimming is that I get women and men, people on in their 40s, they want to learn how to swim. But men quit after 2 weeks. It's very rare that they stay. They are embarrassed. They feel diminished. They feel bad that they can't do something and they have to learn. But women, they stay. And sometimes they stay and they become really good at it and very consistent and very competent at doing it. So that's something that I have also found is that women tend to be better at being humble and just saying, I want to learn, I have to progress and have to do it. And men really dislike the being out of the comfort zone. I don't know if that's just my experience of, or if it's something that you also feel from your...
I definitely see it with the group. We usually get somewhere between 15 and 20 runners. And I've probably got three guys that come regularly. And some of them are good runners. But I do feel that if somebody's not a good runner, and maybe it's, I don't generalize too much, but men who are not good runners want to go out on their own and get better. Women who aren't good runners maybe get that incentive by meeting a group. And it's what got me running regularly, was because I knew I was going to meet this group every Thursday. And I was meeting them and we were chatting, to be honest. I took somebody out last Thursday in the group and we chatted the whole way around and she couldn't believe that she'd run 6K. And so, what do you mean I did 6K? And I was like, you've just run 6K. She, that didn't feel like 6K. So, well, you know, we were chatting. It wasn't a fast pace. We were just, and I was pulling the pace back and she was getting breathless. You know, we were just keeping it easy. And that's kind of like that. You can just help people recognize how they can do what they want to do. And I just think women maybe are more open to that, whereas men are a bit more, I'll come when I'm good.
I'm more competitive.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the reason, but yeah.
That testosterone kicks in. Sorry, Philip. Yeah. And I think maybe that all goes together, you know, that community thing, that triathlon thing, and it should be naturally a good place for women to do stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we have to pass the message also that everyone's welcome. And yeah, sometimes not easy to organize your life around training, but you also don't have to train like a pro. You can do whatever you can do. And yeah, maybe do like I do and use the kids' times of practicing sports to train myself. Yeah, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely when I was working, it was organization was the big thing. And I think if you can be organized, then that's a big benefit. Like little tips and tricks. I used to take my running gear to work. And at the end of the day, I'd put my running gear on and do my run from the car park. So I would then get in the car and go home, because if you go home, it's like, oh, well, I should probably think about cooking dinner. I'll just have a cup of tea. I'll just sit down for 5 minutes. And before you know it, you know, it's an hour later and it's like, oh, I never did get my running. Whereas it's like, I'm just going to be an hour later getting home and that's fine.
Chris says that applies to men as well, the little tips and tricks.
Definitely.
Well, it's true.
To get yourself into, yeah, removing it, moving any barrier to that exercise.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah. Don't think about it too much. If you're going for a morning run or a morning bike, don't give yourself the opportunity to consider it. Just wake up, put that stuff on and go.
I usually, one of my tips is, well, you can save a shower if you run to the swimming pool. Training wise might not be the best, but time wise it's the most efficient.
Yeah, definitely. I keep thinking we should find a way to hook a turbo up to the house, because I'm like, I'm sure I could be running a kettle or something.
It's hard. I've seen a pro cyclist do that with a toaster, and it's hard. A lot of watts.
I was in my old life, I used to work with like startups trying to get people into sport and physical activity, but also ones that would kind of support the leisure, like Centre World. And one of the things that we looked at doing was, how could you power like a swimming pool? Because gyms are facing a crisis in the UK at the moment. Mm-hmm. Like, how could you power a leisure centre through, like, every time someone gets on a treadmill? And ultimately, it's a very difficult thing to do. So it wouldn't quite work. There's a lot of people out there like trying to make these things work, because yes, you motivate people, you know, come run on the treadmill, you'll get a gym membership free, you'll also keep your leisure center open. Like, if there's a way to connect it all together, that can be a nice thing to do. But that one itself was a bit too tricky.
I can imagine the physics doesn't quite work. Yeah. The one I have seen that was quite interesting was putting a server hub next to a swimming pool, because servers need a lot of cooling. So they use that cooling water to then heat the swimming pool.
That would definitely be yeah.
Yeah. That's good. Have you got any other aspects you would like us to chat through, Millie? Any thoughts from you?
No, not specifically. Just quite enjoying a catch up about everything and anything, really. I can't think of anything specific that we sort of. I mean, there's so we could talk for hours, couldn't we? There's so much to it.
I think it's been really good. I mean, Rita and I have had this conversation about three times in the last 2 weeks, and there's always something different comes up, and it's been really good. So thank you very much for coming along. I believe you're going to be in Portugal, is that right?
I am, yeah. I'm going to be out there in the second week, when 3 weeks' time or something like that. So hope there's some good weather, Rita.
I'm preparing everything. Really sunny and bright now.
Her and Diogo have complete responsibility for the weather. It's totally
I will blame you if it's
I will see you there then, because I will be there too.
Oh, brilliant. You're gonna be out the second week or both weeks?
Kind of both weeks, yeah. Most brilliant. Of the time anyway, yeah. So it'll be really good. Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Bye then.
Bye.
Bye bye. Bye bye.
The Believe, Strive, Achieve podcast is produced every week for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at trytrainingharder.com. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at trytrainingharder. Thanks for listening!